Hello and welcome everyone. Today we got a very special roundtable edition set up for you all. Let's start by welcoming our guest seated at the table, Ben the Human.
Hey Draco, it's so great to be back.
Nice to be there, Bendy. Now we have Shuzi as well.
Hey everybody, welcome to another exciting edition of the podcast.
Welcome Shuzi into the roundtable as well. We have also King Sizzle in the place.
Hey Draco, great to be here. Welcome all, everyone.
Welcome, welcome as well. And as a very big surprise today, we have Dead by Chimpunks. How are you?
Hey everyone, thanks for having me. I'm good. How about you, Draco?
I'm doing decent fine. Welcome everyone into it. Today we will be talking about all things achievement set related. So let's dive in right now, I guess. So my first one I have is my dev experience as when I did some achievement set. So my devving experience is pretty much I wanted to do Armada games, or I wanted to see how, like, because I was so addicted to the achievement set would pop, and at some point in my career on Retro Achievement, I wanted to see how this achievement worked out. So I did try to play, I did try to dev my first set, and this is where I kind of like met and talked more with Spory Tyke. So my first set was Mario the Early Years into the Super Nintendo. It was a hack version of it. And I spent a lot of time creating badges, a lot of time testing, and it was pretty damn fun. So just to throw it into the table, so how was, if people have experienced how to dev, what kind of experience did you have so far?
I think I'll take this first. So I did the Ease 3 set for Mega Drive recently, and it was a really great experience. So I was brand new to devving sets on RA, but there's some documentation out there that made it pretty easy to get started. And then there's also a channel in Discord, that made it really easy to connect with people and find out, if you have any questions for anything, to get some answers for those and just figure out what the process is. So I asked to be a junior dev, and that process was pretty quick. They just added me to that role. And then I was able to join the channels and get started. So the first step for me was really picking a game. I had done Ys 3 for SNES and NES, and they were pretty fun. But I noticed that the Mega Drive instance of the game was missing, so I wanted to fill that gap. So the first step that I took was just reserving the game. So I went to that game's forum and just said, I want to reserve this game. And after that, just coming up with ideas for the set and brainstorming with other users and figuring out what they wanted to do in the game. And then beyond that, it was getting my hands dirty with it. So going through and digging for all the memory locations and documenting it. And then just figuring out what I could do with those as far as interesting achievements go. And it was really good to get some feedback from some of the senior devs or regular devs, because they had some really great ideas as far as what would be interesting to do.
Yeah, I mean, from a player perspective, you guys, it's always kind of interesting to see, you know, what people do come up with, especially when it's their first or second achievement set. I mean, I don't personally dev, because I feel like I don't necessarily have the schedule, but I guess if I really wanted to, I would make the time work, because it is, I know that you guys that do dev have put, you know, a lot of hours and a lot of time and love into those sets, everything from the just the badges to the titles of the achievements down to the creativity. And what I was gonna ask you guys that do have the dev experience and kind of dive a little bit more into, because it's something that you know I don't really think about too much, because I don't dev, but is, you know, as far as creativity in regards to achievements, we see a lot of death lists, a lot of damage lists, points achievements, clear X amount of stages and things. So, you know, what when you're trying to come up with a really unique concept for an achievement, kind of where does your brain go with that? So when you're trying to figure out something that makes your set stand out, I know that, you know, Sizzle's developed some sets as well and might have some perspective on that, but anybody feel free to take the wheel on the creativity aspect, because that's kind of what I'm most curious about, being somebody that doesn't dev.
I think as the creative side, I think to make your set maybe stand out is just giving, like, I mean, of course you want like the progressive side of things, like finishing the game or like what unlocks in the game. But as for something that stands out, maybe you want to do something with like the badges, like someone, I can't remember their name right now, but someone did like the Mist set. And I know you talked about it earlier in the previous episode, but they did something really cool with the badges. Like where they had like the colors were like just correct enough so you couldn't see what the badges were until you unlocked it. And that was really cool. And that's like makes the set stand out a lot. So in that aspect, you might want to do something with the badges or maybe like challenges or like mostly like speed running, or maybe they like show off some interesting features of the game. I always thought that maybe I could put like some glitches or something like that in it, but it seems like RA doesn't really want any glitches, so I guess you can't really make the set customizable like that or stand out more. But what you can do is, like, you know, makes or have someone do like the special awesome trick that maybe some people don't know about, and like it like save time, like, oh, take this shortcut here, or oh, you can jump through, you know, hoops to get to this point of time. And I think that makes, you know, if you have a set that shows it off, maybe that, I think that helps stands the set out, you know. But other than that, I mean, I think, you know, anything's pretty much possible with creativity. I think it's the achievement world is yours.
So one thing you make very interesting, Sizzle, here in your point, and which I want to back and forth with it, is the creativity about the achievement. It's like, when you look like a set, like, okay, you example, you play a typical like Super Mario World and stuff like that, or any type of game, like even the Yeast game of 2.0 did, like, you took it like the base of the game and how much you can push it to make it very creative with just one little simple game. Like, for like example, like the badges, like the icons, like, oh, it seems like the more you put more cute images into it, the more almost like the set is getting more life, you know, like more, it's getting like something, like almost like a beautiful flowers. You're just like making so beautiful by just making the heart better. You feel the game's way more beautiful. Also, another aspect which I love to do or to see in the achievement set, like, is like how much you can be creative with how you play the game. Not like your typical, like, okay, I'm gonna play Pokemon and just you just start play with one Pokemon and then you finish the game and it's vice versa. It's just how much cute you can make achievements and play. Like, example, I just played something last night and for the first time I was like, how this person code that way? So I play with, I mean, the set for KSI, and I see like a mushroom spawning, and I needed to use the cape to put the mushroom over a lake, or more like the waters, and just put it over a gaps where the one up is, and I got my, and take the mushroom from there and get and have my points. So how, like, the process for, like, okay, rather than just clearing your stage, you take that aspect out of the mind and you see the player just grab those mushrooms and then you're going from there. So for me, those little thing makes the set way more unique into like terms of anything. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't think you could have said it better, honestly, Draco. When it comes to the creativity in a set, that's one of the things I look forward to most. When I see new sets coming out. And just to clarify, you know, again, this is from an exclusively player perspective. So again, I don't dev, and I do know that there is a lot of challenge that goes into being creative with the set, especially based on, you know, sometimes memory address limitations. But I really look forward to when I see a set and there is at least an achievement or two that has kind of that twist or that flavor that really gives a set, you know, that extra, you can feel that the dev knew the title well enough to put that extra love into it. I talked a while ago on the podcast about some sets that I played that were pretty fun. And one of them that I remember was Clay Fighters 2. And the reason that I really, really liked this set was that, you know, being that it's a fighting game sets for people that don't play a lot of fighting games, pretty typical that you'll have complete the game with, you know, complete the arcade playthrough with each character. And this set, what really made it unique is that not only did it have a lot of different flavor achievements, but also that a lot of them you kind of had to you know, go the extra mile in terms of thinking about how you were going to get this done. You know, so I can give you some examples just taking a look at the set now. One of them is to win a round as a certain fighter by KO, dealing no damage in the first half, so not attacking for the first half. There's another one that's, you know, win a round as a certain character after dodging three projectiles using their special move, which is like a backflip. And you know, even as somebody that, you know, a lot of the time you're focused on just trying to get a set done, grinding away at points some of the time, it is really cool to have those extra bits of flavor plugged into a set to kind of enjoy it for what it is and get to experience the game in a way that you might not normally experiencing, and not just feel like, okay, I'm just going through a bunch of damageless challenges, or I'm just trying to complete a bunch of stages. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just like Draco said, that really is the essence, that extra flavor is seeing those unique types of achievements plugged in. So I always look forward to that whenever new sets come out, is seeing something like that from a player perspective.
Yeah, I think those are some really good points, Schutzy. I think one that sticks out to me is Lawnmower for the NES. It's a homebrew game where you basically mow the lawn, and there's flowers and rocks and different obstacles to avoid. So that set has a good mix of like, so some of the achievements are beat level 1 all the way up to level 10. Then there's a challenge that's beat the game without running out of fuel or stepping on a flower or a rock. And then there's some very creative ones where you have to basically, you have to mow different patterns in the map. And then once you do that, it pops the achievement. So one of those is that I thought was kind of challenging and interesting was on level 6, cut more 3x3 bases connected by a center tile. So on that map, you start off with this 3x3 section that's already mowed. And then there's rocks throughout the level. So basically you have to cut a single tile from the center of that tile, and then you have to cut another 3x3, and you have to extend that over the entire map. So I thought that was like a really cool, interesting take on the game, and something that you definitely would have never done playing the game casually. But because of the achievement set, it really makes you do creative things. So I thought that was clever on the dev's part.
I've played Lawnmower as well, and I think that really is one of the perfect examples of a set that just has you play a game in a way you would never even think to play it before. Because honestly, think about it. If it weren't for retro achievements, who would ever come up with the idea to mow these lawns in these very specific patterns as these little creative self-imposed challenges? And I think that's really part of the magic of retro achievements. I know a lot of my favorite moments on the site have been those sets with those really creative, unique challenges. But at the same time, thinking about things from a player perspective, if it's a game, if I'm looking over the achievement set for a game I haven't played before, sometimes those challenge achievements can be a little intimidating. So for example, when I'm replaying a game from my childhood or a game that I love, I think to myself, oh yeah, I'd love to push myself and do some new challenges. This is going to be great. But on the other hand, if I'm just going into a game I've never played before, I might see something like a damageless or deathless achievement and be intimidated. I might think to myself, this is too challenging. I'm just not going to play this set. This is way too hard, way too intimidating. So I'm curious for you guys, before you start a set, when you're just looking at the achievement list, what do you keep your eyes on? Is there anything that either makes you think, I really want to play the set, or maybe I should stay away from the set? I'm interested in your guys' thoughts on that.
Well, to answer your question, Bendy, here is like, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of used to always look the set, and I'm like, should I play this? It's like news. And I see like a couple of visible, like especially on RPGs. Every time I want to play RPGs, I look always for missable. And when I see a bunch, I was like, really missable? I never played this game before. What I do? Is it like hard? Is it like easy to pick up? It's like you have no ideas. And then it's like, of course, if you're going for the completion of the badges, of course, it's something you have to look for. But if you just play for normal and having fun as a casual players, well, you don't look very much for those type of thing, which are, I mean, that can be like very like a dead run. Like just imagine like you play like a lot of hours into something and you just don't want to mess up because you want to complete it and you just like screw it up, you have to restart the thing over, which is quite sad. Another aspect I wanted to bring here I'm not a dev anymore, but when I did dev my four set right now, I did dev. One aspect I want to talk here, if people want to pick up after, it's fine, is about the aspect of when, example, if I have one of the viewers you have or a streamer stream the game as you have devin. So for me, when I see Max play my first game or a couple of my friends play the first game on live, and then when they go back and through the experience I got or I have seen playing and devving this game, oh man, that feels so good. I feel almost like a child or running out and seeing like a bunch of candy. It's like, okay, mom, can I get this? Can I get that, mom? Oh my God, they have so many flavor. Can I get this? This is the feeling I got when every time I see a person play my set. That's the flavor I got, like the excited man. I mean, I'm just so happy. Or if that's the same way as when I'm watching a new person from the Quebec scene, which is streaming, right? I mean, it was kind of streaming and he played like for the first time, kind of like retro achievement. So I'm seeing him do the progress of me when I was like 2 years ago and seeing his face like so focused, so hype, and just like bring me like some flavors to my life, which is very like sometimes we forget about those.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that you bring that up from the perspective of being a dev in somebody's stream who's playing the title that you dev'd, because I get the exact same feeling as a player when a dev comes in my stream. I get excited about it. You know, I've built some of my best friendships on RA because I end up having such a great conversation with the dev and them kind of imparting some of their wisdom a lot of the time onto me. I mean, you know, people, big shout outs to like Blotch, JBMR, Snowpin, MGN, S8M. A lot of those guys are people that, you know, I've played their sets on stream or I've talked about them on the podcast, and we've built such a great friendship talking about their sets and even, you know, doing a little bit of testing as well. You know, when there's issues, it's nice to be able to, you know, it's like being able to have a doctor right away, you know, a phone call away, right? Having that dev right there in your stream talking directly with you. Whereas, you know, if you're playing, I mean, let's face it, with modern games, you know, when you have an issue, you know, some of those games have in-game ticket systems or ways to report bugs on the forums or whatever for the title, but having that personal connection with the developer and even getting to provide them feedback in real time so that they can address those issues. I mean, that's something that you don't really get to experience a lot of the time outside of retro achievements unless you're in a really specific job or field. So as somebody that does game testing for my work career, it's kind of great to be able to have something that's almost parallel in my free time. And it just makes it a lot easier to be able to communicate when there are issues with sets. They get addressed and inevitably they get fixed, and I end up, you know, forming that relationship with the developer. So there's a really unique I guess, experience that happens there. So I too, Draco, get really excited when the inverse happens, when a dev comes in my stream and I'm working on their set and they're kind of telling me, you know, kind of, okay, well, this for this one, you can do this, or saying, hey, this, you know, this popped when it, I don't think it was, did you intend to have it work that way? And things like that. It's just great to be able to do that.
And then for me, on the flip side, I've had experiences where I've been watching a retro achievement streamer and I've seen them playing a game that I've also played on RA. And, you know, I've talked about this before in the podcast, but I tend to play a lot of obscure games on RA, or games that maybe not that many people have played. And there's that weird little feeling of, even though I'm not the dev, just that I have mastered the set and someone else is playing the set that I've mastered, it kind of brings us together. It brings us a little closer. We have something to have a common ground on. If maybe they're getting stuck on a certain level, a certain challenging achievement, I could be like, hey, have you tried this? Maybe this is the way I did it. Maybe this will work for you. And I think that's kind of, I don't know, it's corny, but I keep coming back to that idea of like retro achievements bringing people together, whether you're a player or whether you're a dev or whether you just watch streams. It's like there's that little connective thread, that connective tissue, that it just brings us together in these little interesting ways. And I can't tell you how many friendships I've made on RA that have just started with, you know, me and someone else played the same achievement set. We started talking about it, and then one thing led to another, and then the rest is history, right?
Yeah, I think the social aspect on RA has been really interesting because, so I joined the site last July, and I really didn't connect with many users until maybe August or so. So it's been really cool to dev sets and see people play them. And when I first released the Yeast 3 set, I was watching Holy Shinx play it on the Discord stream, and it was just really cool seeing what he did and going through the sets. And there was one boss where basically if you're not a certain level, he takes very, very little damage. And I ran into that in dev testing this game. And it was just interesting to see him fail sort of in the same spots that I did and then have to go grind up levels. And with the same set, watching Draco play it was pretty funny too. There was one part where you kill I believe it's the second boss, and you're supposed to, a door opens up and you just go to the room to the right. But he decided to go left and try to jump up this waterfall. So it was just funny seeing him try to play this game in this way, just maybe not fully knowing the ins and outs of the game, but then he eventually found the right path. So it was kind of funny seeing that, and it was just very interesting to see how different people play your sets.
I do 100% agree on the whole social aspect, but I wanted to mention that connecting together with other people was an interesting experience for me as well. I started doing badges because I was like, oh man, I could possibly make this badge look a little bit more lively and creative. And that also sparked a flame inside me, like, oh, I can do this a lot, and I can make, you know, connections with people per the art side, because there's a lot of other artists out there who also have the same kind of like opinion and style that I think opened up this big giant chain of other artists. Like, I've made a bunch of different connections with, oh, your badges look really nice, what about these ones, these look pretty good, I'm like, yeah, those look awesome. And it's just that connection that, you know, the feedback gives to other people. Like another one of my friends that I've met recently was Rudo. They just started making sets recently after doing the same stuff that I was doing, and I was like, oh man, I can't wait to play your new sets. And it's just like, we both started doing devving stuff, and we want to play each other's sets, and the same thing for everyone else. It's like, once you made that connection, you kind of like, oh man, I can't wait to play that new set you're working on.
Yeah, I think actually now that you mention it, Sizzle, that's how you and I first interacted so long ago, I think, because I, you know, saw that the game art for, I think, Stop That Roach and for Booby Boys had kind of just the default art or whatever. And so I wanted to do something about that. And I think a long time ago, you asked me, I think I was doing the art for Booby Boys. I was redoing the badge. And you asked me if I had any plans to redo the, It was Stop That Roach, because I'm looking at the icons that you made now. But anyway, I redid the icons for it, the badge for it. And I think you asked me if I had any plans to do the icons for the achievements as well. And I said, no, or something like that. And that's where we initially first connected. And to kind of, touch on your point a little bit, from a player perspective, again, you know, I was kind of surprised a little bit in the comments on our YouTube about people doing the exact, I thought I was one of maybe a small number of people that when you're playing a set, you're going for that badge because you just love the art. Screw the points, screw the completion percentage, you just want the art. You just want that flash on your page. You want that badge. And I was surprised to see, I mean, maybe I kind of picture a world where there are some people that, you know, they really just, they want that badge because they want their art on their profile. But I was surprised to see how many people kind of share that with me, where sometimes you just want the art. You know, 90% of the time, I would say I'm very focused on one aspect of, a set. You know, I'm very methodical. Maybe today I'm feeling trying to get some points. Maybe today I'm looking for a good challenge and it's not about the points. You know, it's a 300-400 point set that's going to take me, some time, right? It's going to take some learning and it's going to take some commitment. But then there's some of the time where I don't care what kind of challenges I'm going to face. You know, I don't care what's in front of me, even if there's, I would say my biggest issue, one of my weaknesses, is speedrunning achievements. But, you know, for example, for the Phantom Menace for episode one, I just wanted that sick Darth Maul icon on my profile. So I just, you know, I slugged through it and just really wanted to master that title just because I wanted that cool looking badge. So, you know, shout outs and big credits to the people that exclusively work on the badge art, because there is some really great art out there. And also to the developers that put that extra love and soul into the badge and the icons for the achievements that they do. Cause those little things, like Draco said earlier, they really do stand out and give us that, just that extra oomph that kind of, makes somebody want to play your set more. You know, they feel more inclined to do it. They're like, wow, this person, not only did they do great achievements, great badges, they went that extra mile. So that does stand out to me. And it's those extra little things that kind of that push the envelope that are always really impressive to me from the devs. So big shout outs to them again for that.
So I will go in a second to your point about badges, because I have some funny thought about that also. But I wanted to speak about, like, example, for achievement set, like when Sizzle did his first set, Nickdone Racing, like I already mentioned in the podcast, or even like Chipmunks did these histories, like I have so much fun to just like, okay, this is literally like one of my friends, and this is your first set. I'm going to try to master it as possible, because you have like an attachment to it now. It's like, it's your friends and they have done almost the same process as you. And this is amazing how you just have a couple of friends and you aren't just like doing them for them. So it gives the set another flavor to it. You know, he did some cool badges. He spent a lot of time just for you, just for making your racing games. And then you just destroy it. You just destroy what he did. That's amazing. How many times, like, example, Sizzle said, like, okay, I have made some hard time trials and let's go for that. It was just amazing. It was like, not really sizzle. I mean, for me, on my own perspective, I like racing. I demolish everything in one go or two goes. Like, how did that go so fast? Well, I'm just used to that. I just like to doing that. And for Shuzi is the answer. There is for the badges. Like, I'm pretty much the same. Like when Snowpin did Ragnarok DS for me, it's like a game I played so much when I was a kid, and then it just brings me so much memory. And I see these cute badges, and I was just like, okay, I have to do it. I have to do it. In my mind, it's like I have to do it. So many times I said I'm gonna do it, but some game I have failed on, and some game I have done it. But man, having this Ragnarok DS, it means the world to me. Like, he made the game for me. I read the entire story for him because he said, like, you would never read that. But I did read it. I was very proud to read the story the entire time. And I got the badges. So everything was very cool. But overall, my thought here, too, if people want to pick up after me, is my thought is memories. You know, like, you have so many memories about anything for achievement sets. So somebody create an achievement set, and then what's gonna bring with it? A lot of people memory packs going with it. Other would be like friendships more related to them. Example, you make great, like me and Chipmunks, we are more and more friend now than before because we talk more, you create some stuff, I play it the same way for Sizzle. So you have a lot of bunch of connections. Like people is doing badges, the others is just other than that. And for me, one of my most proud memories, it was still the Mario Kart 64, because this one was my first set to play it on RA, the first one I mastered. And at the end, MGN, that's the one who created this set. And I never knew until maybe like after a year who he was, and we just talked together and we are friends. So all those connections between the year and stuff just connected at the end.
Yeah, Draco, about the whole, you know, memories thing, I was making, so like you were talking about earlier with Nicktoons Racing, I have a lot of memories of that game, and I think that's, for a dev point of view, I think that's somewhat what we might be able to do more, is that like, oh, I like this game a lot, does this game have a set? And no, oh, it doesn't have a set, well, maybe I can make a set for it, you know, that's kind of what sparked me to do Nicktoons Racing. I had like a long time memory of playing it when I was younger, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna look at this set, maybe I can make some achievements for it, and I know this game inside out, and maybe someone in the achievement world will like this game also. And that's kind of what I got the feedback of. Some people didn't know about it, some people like, oh, this game has the sequels, but I didn't know there was an original game that might have been better than what they're making now. And I also had some people say, oh, I remember this game. This game was awesome. And then they play the set, and then they either master or they don't master it. But I think that it just makes everything like awesome or better that we share all these memories together about, oh, we both played this game when we were younger, like Mario Kart N64 or DS. You know, that game has a set. And what kind of challenges, like, you know, kind of like how Smash Brothers, where we would always challenge each other with different challenges, like, oh, me and my friends used to have this challenge with throwing bats at each other, because bats were like the most critical hitting item, as much as I think. So we would just like throw bats at each other, and that could also spark challenges on retro achievements, like, oh, don't pick up any items, or what can you do with this item? Can you like kill or can you KO 5 different people with this item? That kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that some of the best memories associated with retro achievements for me personally are those moments where I play a game that I know and love, that I think I know inside and out. I look at the achievement list and I have that moment of, wait, how do I do this? I read the description of an achievement for a game that I think I know everything about, and suddenly I realize I don't know what this is. To give a recent example, I was playing the set by Spory Tyke and Daniel ARP for Pokemon Heart Gold and Soul Silver. There's an achievement in that set, Get Gifted a Tentacool in Cyanwood City. I looked at that achievement and I thought, what the heck is this? I read into it. It turns out there was this secret in the game that goes that went undiscovered for years. And to make a long story short, Spory and Daniel read about it from a tweet that went viral and thought, hey, let's make this an achievement. I know another great example of that that really resonated with a lot of people, although a set that I haven't played personally, is Castlevania 3 on NES. There's an achievement, kill the Cyclops using the dagger as a lightning rod. It's one of those things you read and ask yourself, what is this? How do you do that? And sure enough, it turns out it's a secret that went undiscovered for years. It went viral years later, and they made an achievement for it. So I think those are some of those standout things in RA that really resonate with me, really give me those memorable moments. When I think that I know a game, and the achievement set still manages to teach me new things and just make me more familiar with some of my favorite games.
Yeah, I like when the sets make you learn things about your just games that you grew up with in your childhood, too. One example that I can think of is Chrono Trigger. There's an achievement to basically get some certain type of cat in Chrono's room. And I had no idea that you could even get cats aside from the initial cat that you get. But when you play carnival games, you earn cat food. And then you can go to Chrono's room and check the cat bowl and see how much cat food you have. And I don't know if it's RNG, but I did some research into how to win different or how to lure different cats into your house in Chrono Trigger. So it's just a really weird thing to even Google, but it was just interesting that that was something that I had no idea that existed in the game. And there was an achievement set for it. Or an achievement specifically for it. So it was cool to learn that about the game. Another example that I can think of is DuckTales on the NES. I played that a ton as a kid and even did some minor speedrunning in it a couple years ago. But there's this tech where you can use your cane against the wall and that pushes blocks or does some interaction with the object that's on the wall. But in the Himalayas level, there's this part to get, I believe it's the one up, where you have to do the cane and sort of jump at the same time to knock a block to the side that's above ground level. So as a kid, I just never knew how to get that and didn't even know that tech existed. So it was kind of interesting that these games that I played as a kid and these games that I even even dabbled in speedrunning with. These achievement sets were able to teach me something new with them.
Yeah, I think you guys brought up some excellent points regarding some of the more esoteric aspects of certain titles. And, you know, really when you think you know a game like the back of your hand and you really don't, it's always really interesting to think about how much you think you know about a game versus what you actually in reality might know about a game. I had a pretty similar experience to you guys with the Final Fantasy Legend sets. You know, when I was first getting into RA, I played all three of those as a kid. I have a big passion for those sets and those games rather, but also those sets because those sets take some time to kind of figure everything out. And there's some really obscure stuff that they ask you to do, defeating bosses in certain ways, and it's just really interesting to see. I didn't think that was possible, but I feel like with RPGs that really does come up a lot. You know, I see that with a lot of RPG sets is a lot of more esoteric stuff, and you know, one of the other things too, kind of just thinking along those lines, is sometimes when you have a game that's a little bit limited by mechanics. You know, Myst was brought up earlier for the 3DO. That's a great set. Because of the limited mechanics of the game, You know, he MGS Satem kind of went a little bit esoteric with some of the way that he put the I guess the clues for the set, and it made it overall just a really fun experience, kind of like riddles that you have to solve. So it is really interesting to just kind of see, you know, what people are able to dig up on the internet. And then I guess the last thing that you guys made me think of was when a game in itself is so esoteric that there's no data about the game, and so you just kind of have to wing it. This is like 1% or less of the games on Retro Achievements, because everything's on YouTube, right? You know, just about everything is on YouTube. Somebody has had this problem before you at some point and has figured out a better way to do it than you. That's just the reality, right? Somebody's had the exact same problem that you've had, and they've just figured out a better way to do it. You know, they've solved the puzzle. You don't need to do that. But way back when, I played a fun title called Megabots for the Apple II, and this title, there was a little bit of video footage floating around on the internet, on YouTube, I think, but for the most part, the title, it wasn't real clear kind of how to get through it in a really efficient way, and ultimately how to get some of the achievements, as most of the achievements are completion-based for Megabots. And so that was one where it was just kind of fun to have to wing it a little bit. You know, obviously it's a different brand of esoteric, but it kind of goes back to the fact of, okay, I don't know anything about this game. There's nothing about this game on the internet. Guess we're gonna figure it out. So it kind of just made me think back to that fun memory of playing that old Apple II set back in the day. So yeah.
I'm really glad you brought this up, Shu, because I'm actually dealing the same problem with one of my new upcoming sets called SI System, or Internal Section, and it's for the PlayStation. But there's like hardly any info on it. I found some nits and some hints and stuff on like forum posting or forum topics around the it's a rail shooter / tube shooter, but I found like a forum just on that like topic, and they were talking about it like, oh, this game is really obscure, like no one really knows what this game is. It was only based in Japan, but basically there's different objects and things you can find within the enemies and within like some different properties. Like one of the bosses is like a newspaper boss. Well, it also shoots like letters at you, but if you directly hit one of those letters, or if you come in contact with those letters, it pops up in the bottom of the screen, and apparently that whatever you spell out actually changes your overall score. I haven't really figured it out yet, but that's like so bizarre, and so like it's not really a thing that's written down in paper. It's just kind of like a rumor, but it somehow it works, I guess. Like there's also these other collectibles inside the game that I found that were really interesting. Like there's like 30 or 40 different collectibles that you can find in this shooter, and I haven't found them all, but at the same time, they're not really written anywhere. They're just like, oh, if you shoot this one specific area in this one specific spot, you might find, you know, an object that flies out of nowhere, or something crazy happens, and then it changes your overall score. And it's just so weird that some of these things that are really obscure don't have anything talking, or no one is talking about them.
Yeah, I always found obscure media fascinating, even outside of gaming. But something I've noticed about retro achievements is, although most retro games, you know, have their fans, they have their things documented somewhere on the internet, retro achievements also hosts hacks, homebrews, unlicensed games, and those tend to be less well documented, right? And I can't tell you how many times I've been playing through, you know, something like, say, a Mario World hack, one of the less known ones that has maybe one or two long plays on YouTube. Oh, but the long play didn't get all the secret exits. They didn't get all the 3-up moons, so I guess you're just on your own to figure that out. Or maybe some unlicensed game where, okay, it has an entry on the unlicensed game's wiki, but, oh, it's a stub. Too bad. Guess you got to figure it out on your own. And it's kind of crazy because in some of these cases, these achievement sets are the most well-documented part of the game on the entire internet, at least as far as I could find. So it's kind of this balancing act of first you start out with the internet sleuthing, and then if you hit a dead wall, then you start sleuthing within the game itself to try to figure out what you could figure out. And that sort of thing is just absolutely fascinating to me. I love it. Some of my best memories on RA are doing that kind of thing, just trying to figure out the obscure, the undocumented, figure out how to succeed.
So I was listening a bit of you guys about bring something in. I just want to bring back this topic again because I really like it in some way. And I just think it's just that's just funny how it sounds like. But I really like when I play a set of my friend, like Chipmunk's, like, wait, your strategy is way more good like this. I don't know why it's better. Like, it's way more easier than I did it the first time or something. I just like to, every time I play a game, I always enjoy to see, like, how I can broke it. You know, like, not into, like I mean, like, cheating ways. I mean, how I can broke it and make it, like, way easier. But I just like it. It's just, like, a feeling where I got. Every time I play video games, like, huh, if I play this, but it's not supposed to do that, but it's not saying, like, how to mean to do that way, that's going to work. If I use my cape like this and fly there, oh, I would get this way more earlier than you're supposed to. And just for me, just fascinated. I'm just enjoying and just laughing at it. Like a good example I can play is I was a little bit depressed into that day. I don't know why, but I was like, okay, let's play some wrestling for fun, you know, just wrestling. And then I started with the NES version, play wrestling. And then I pick it up. I just was playing in one way, just like kicking the CPUs, kicking it. And then suddenly just making good progress. And then I was like, this is way more hard than expected. And I don't know why, but it was just harder. So I get some research, find videos of a speedrun. And the guy was like playing very different. I was like, huh? Why? Oh, that work? And I was just amazed to it. And then I just saw it a little bit on streams. And what happened? The traffic goes amazing. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Like you see like a couple of people like, oh my God, is that real? I mean, I guess, yeah. And they just like, just doing it because I was just doing it. So sometimes when you play an achievement set or something, you just see like, I'm just amazed to see like a bunch of people copy what I played. And I always love to copy what Bendy plays because, I mean, that's my friend. So it's just like a little bit like rivalry, but I really like when I kill other stuff. Not, like I said, not into the bad way, but sometimes like, huh, you just outsmart me. I mean, I did not thinking that way. And just bring it up. I was like, oh, damn. That's, oh, wow. That just clever. So, you know, like a clever move. It's always awesome to see.
Yeah, no, I definitely share that with you in the fact that, you know, optimization is a really big thing when you're trying to play a lot of games and play them in the best way possible. And also, obviously, what you mentioned with what we'll call creative use of game mechanics, right? So, you know, being within the rules of the achievement set, so not cheating, but figuring out a creative way to use the game's mechanics against it to utterly just destroy a set. There is, I know because I've seen you on stream, Draco, you get that big smile on your face and that satisfaction of, wow, can you really, like you said, can you really do this? You know, with the wrestling games, that was a great example. And, you know, I had something like that happen with me with Haunted House for the 2600. It kind of made me think it's my only, 100 point achievement that I've ever earned. But, there's essentially, not to go on and on about it, I guess, try and explain the game a little bit, but there's three pieces. It's a maze. You have to pick up three different pieces of the CERN and get to the end. And level 9, or the 100 point achievement is escape with a magic urn without being scared, game 9. So don't lose a single life in escape. And there's one item that makes you invulnerable to death, but you can't carry any of the urn pieces. And so, you know, I at first this just seems daunting and impossible. And even when I got the achievement, it was super, super hard. I grinded it out for hours, but I found a way because of the Atari's somewhat limited amount of memory to, there's a sequence where, you know, if you keep wiping over and over again and losing, eventually there's a specific pattern. You have to memorize it and everything's in the dark, right? Because this is level 9. But there's a specific pattern that if you go fast enough and you do the perfect movement, you don't ever have to pick up the scepter. And it's just really tough to memorize it because, again, on level 9, you're in the dark the whole time. So you just kind of have to do everything by feel. But I remember being so proud. I was like, wow, you can do this without the scepter and just circumvent the game's mechanics. Granted, it's still really tough to do it that way because you have to memorize that pattern is going to happen. You have to be ready for it and you have to be on your game. But I'll never forget that because that was my one 100-point achievement that I've ever earned. And for people that aren't too familiar with the point structure of retro achievements, 100-point achievements are very, very rare. You know, most achievements fall into the 1 to 5. 10, 25. Sometimes if an achievement is very, very difficult, it falls into a 50. So 100-point achievements are those kind of near impossible ones. And I can say for sure that this one was definitely kind of in the realm of near impossible. I know that someone did post on the comments, I remember, about something with the scepter. So someone did do it within the intended mechanics and probably just grinded it out that way. But figuring it out this way, I was like, wow, I kind of doubt anyone's done it this way. So it's kind of cool to have that personal discovery on my own after just seeing what the Atari kept kicking at me.
First of all, I just want to say big congratulations on mastering that set shoot. I've taken a look at it personally, and it didn't take me long to determine, I think I'm not going to play this one. This seems way, way too hard for me. So big congratulations on pulling that off. But when you got to talking about Atari 2600, it made me think of that classic quote, restrictions breed creativity, or limitations breed creativity. And I think we see that a lot with Atari sets. I think it's a common misconception that, oh, there's not much you can do with Atari because the games are so simple, all you could really do is high score achievements, you know? But in my experience on RA, I don't know if you guys can relate to this, maybe you guys can add to this, but I've seen so many 2600 sets that have surprisingly creative achievements that make me think, wow, this is a unique way of playing this game, or I didn't even know that something like this was possible within the restrictions of the Atari 2600 simplicity plus the, you know, limitations of achievement logic, or I'm not super knowledgeable about that, I'm not a dev. But yeah, I wanted to pose a question to you guys. Have any of you guys had that experience where you do an achievement or you look at an achievement set and you think to yourself, wow, that's really creative. I would have never thought to do that, but that developer got really creative within their restrictions.
Yeah, I can definitely speak to that. You know, I talked a little bit about Clay Fighters 2 earlier and how Hershon is the name of the developer who came up with some really creative stuff to that. And it's always, you know, again, you talked a little bit about the 2600 and some of the stuff that people come up with for the Atari sets is just kind of blows my mind. I mean, the system and the titles for it are so simplistic, yet people are still able to come up with some great stuff for it. And it's always that, I mean, we've talked, you know, quite a bit about the creativity aspect, but it really is just a really interesting to see how other people's minds work, you know, because I think a lot of the time when we play all of these titles, or if we're somebody that, you know, we're going through tons and tons of titles, it's really easy to get stuck in the mindset of, okay, you know, I got to get through these stages and I got to go through this and I got to do this and that. And I think that's one of my biggest weaknesses when I'm going through sets, is I'm so focused on what's ahead that I'm not looking at the bigger picture, right? But if I were to look at the bigger picture, I would probably master a lot of titles a lot quicker if I, you know, if I did things a little bit differently. And I think that's kind of one of the things I'm starting to try to work towards. I know Draco is, this is one of his biggest strengths, is being able to take a look at a set, figure out, you know, kind of what's what with it, even without, one of the amazing things about what Draco does some of the time is that he plays a game and he just figures it out without any documentation whatsoever, no videos, just goes in, goes for it, and he's able to really, really just pick things up really quickly. And he does that with a lot of different titles, which is really impressive to me. So that's one of the things that, you know, as somebody that sometimes is getting into a lot of sets at a time, I really try and am trying to work towards kind of having that mindset and looking at the bigger picture of things. You know, optimization is what we kind of called it, or just being efficient. Because I think that, you know, if you do want to be a little bit competitive on RA and you do want to play a lot of titles, that you kind of have to be, you kind of got to be a little bit more well-rounded. You have to look at that big picture. You can't just think, you know, what's the next achievement? You have to take a look at the set, figure out documentation, figure out what you can and get a feel for the set and kind of go from there. And there, you know, there is that, that feeling of when it all comes together at the end of the day, you know, when you've figured things out on your own. You know, early on in the early episodes of the podcast, Bendy, I remember talking about those aha moments where we're like, I figured this out on my own. But I've kind of shifted a little bit away from that in some aspects because, you know, sometimes the documentation, it's not a crutch, you know, it's just there to kind of get you into the right mindset. And especially with execution based titles, right? So the strat may be out there, but the actual execution of the strategy could still be very difficult in itself. And so even if the aha moment is taken away from you, it's still not watered down, right? Because you still have to master the execution of, you know, platforming or getting a perfect fight, making it through the arcade on hard or whatever. There's still that execution based aspect of it. And so, you know, thinking like that, it's just because you're looking something up, it doesn't mean you're ruining it. I mean, with RPGs, obviously, it's going to depend a little bit on the type of title it is. But at the same time, I mean, there's no shame in that if there's, you know, mastery of execution still, because that's still a high ceiling to achieve, especially if you're not good at that particular type of platformer or fighting game or whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Shuzi. Just people are going to play achievement sets how they want to play it. If they want to look up information, then I think that's totally fine. You guys also touched on previous podcasts about softcore versus hardcore mode. And I think people are going to play the way that they want to play. And as long as they're having fun with it, then I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But I did want to touch on Bendy's question about sort of the limitations. And one of the sets that came to mind for me was Mr. Gauss did a set for Final Fantasy IV for the SNES. And it's not really the limitations of the system or the achievements system or anything like that. But it's basically an RPG, and he came up with some really, really creative achievements for it. He has this whole section that is called Chikabo Quest. And basically what you do for that is you just go to certain points on the map, and he has these little thumbnails of where you need to go on the map, and you need to press Y, which is a button that you really don't use on the overworld map of Final Fantasy IV. And then you'll see the achievement pop if you're in this specific area and you press that button. So it's sort of like a scavenger hunt of going around this map. And the game's an RPG, so you really wouldn't, you probably wouldn't even go to those tiles in a casual playthrough. But it's just sort of a fun element. There's also a treasure hunter section of that achievement set where you just have to get all of the treasure in specific rooms. And then there's some really, really unique boss challenges. One that are actually probably two that stood out for me. One was defeat Scarmiglione, I think his name is, with a single action directed at him. So that's using one action on the boss and having him die somehow. I won't give any spoilers, but just that process of trial and error and figuring out what works and what doesn't. And then similarly, another boss is defeat the true form of the Dark Elf by only directing two actions at it. So just these really creative ways of playing it and in fighting bosses, I thought was really interesting in the set. And I think he did a great job making pretty good RPG into just a really creative and great set all around.
So I got maybe like a last thought for myself, which I want to bring with all the people if they want to contribute to this thought. So what do you like in an achievement set and what I would like to see in the future? So one interesting, like I already mentioned, like all my thoughts so far is friendships. And friends. I mean, friend. They are the same, Draco. I know. So what I mean by that is like friendship is a big part of this community. So if people are not joining by other people's, I think what I can recommend is try to open your heart to the others. Try to talk to the others more and see what happens. Because you never know. You can maybe like, I like this dev a lot. Maybe we can work together into a co-op and making an achievement set great. Try to open yourself at more and stuff. And what I was thinking more is the multiplayer set sections. So me and Bendy have played Paper Mario N64, which we need to finish at some point. I know we will. But that enjoyment to me and Bendy, just play a simple Paper Mario. And I just like remember like when he was just pulling the character boost and putting like on the big screen, I was like, Benny, what are you doing, my friend? I was just so laughing so hard. But those little moments, just sharing this little stuff on multiplayer is amazing. I would love to see more achievement set created by this way or this idea. Like just like bring, even if you have to, I mean, I know it's not really much supported much to play with some console, but we have other ways to put two players in one set and just play it out with a friend or something. But I have other memories which me and my girlfriend we playing SM64, and I was just doing it for the pretty much the funsies and see what happened. And I know like a lot of people enjoy when I did that. And we are in it into the basement, and into the basement you can pull out the waters from the basement if people have played this game. And I said to my girlfriend, okay, listen, it's not complex. It's just at three, we jump at the same time, and then we just ground pound, and then the water is gone because we have an achievement for it. And then I was like one, two, and she already jumped and grabbed. I was like, what are you doing? And I was screaming so hard. And I was like, okay, but that at the end, the achievement still pop. But that's just like excitement or like because like sometimes when you're a little bit too much competitive, you forget the aspect of having fun. But that moment, I was like, okay. It's fine. See, we still got it, but I mean, all the emotion I got through my stomach or my brain was insanely high. So I would really enjoy to see example like Mario Party set multiplayers or any game where you can put two players on and just for fun. Even if like I know like sometimes we cover like the base set example for SM60 or SMW, but still like. I'm sure we can like maybe give maybe less point, but if people want to do like multiplayer set, so we can enjoy with friends and other, because I'm pretty sure like I have a lot of friends would be willing to play like one time with me and just having fun into a set. So I'm very curious to see into maybe this final thought here. What do you think all about this experience?
Yeah, I have not had a chance to. You know, dive into any multiplayer sets. But I do have a roommate and they do play video games. So it's always a possibility here in the future. I do remember also watching that clip of her, your girlfriend jumping a little bit early and still getting the achievement. I remember that clip from your stream, but I think, you know, I guess, like I said, I haven't had a chance to dive into multiplayer sets, but on the topic of meeting friends and making friends on RA through, you know, having a common interest, like Bendy was saying, playing similar sets or seeing somebody go through that same struggle that you've gone through, I think there's a lot of value in that, in just making friends through RA and you know, getting to vicariously relive a set through someone else, I guess is the way that I've worded this before. You know, and there's a lot of the times too where, you know, we're all friends, we all talk quite a bit, and so we all end up playing a lot of the same sets. You know, sometimes we branch off and we do that. We don't play, you know, the same sets, but there's a lot of the times where, you know, Draco, you master something, and I'm like, okay, maybe he's got the strats. Maybe I should take a look at this. Or, you know, someone will message me and they'll say something like, hey, I see you mastered this. How did you do this achievement? So there is a lot of the time where that'll happen. It's really cool to meet people through that branch of RA and just kind of get to know people through having played a similar set or talking strats or, you know, anything like that, just to be able to meet other people and share this passion that we all love so much and enjoy every day together.
In that aspect, shoot, it's really, like you said, it's really awesome to meet people and share different strats. I know, I think me and Draco have shared some strats over Mario Party DS, because I think that's when we both connected for the first time. I liked Mario Party DS, he liked Mario Party DS. I was watching a stream and he was like, oh, this new Mario Party set has come out. And I was like, hey, Draco, do you want to like maybe race on it or like see who can master it first? I mean, I think it all started off with, you know, we were both playing it and I was like noticing that he was somewhat against me, so I was like, oh, maybe we should, you know, race. But at the same time, we were also sharing the different strategies, like, oh, how did you get this achievement, how did you get that achievement, oh, well, I did it this way, and then, oh, I tried doing that way but it wasn't really working. But then once we like started getting really into it and closing in on the end of the mastery, we kind of got more competitive, but we're still having fun. Like I would play and then he would play, and then I'd be like, oh man, I gotta catch up, so I would, you know, play more than I planned to play just to catch up to him. And at the end, you know, it all ended off like all wholesome, like, oh, you know, you did pretty good, but I still won. You know, it's like that moment of feeling where that connection, and now we're playing more games with the races that we're doing on stream. But as for multiplayer sets, like Draco mentioned, I think that would be an awesome thing to have. There's more multiplayer sets. Like I know the Nicktoons Racing has a multiplayer mode. That'd be really cool if I could make a set for that, or like I think Diddy Kong Racing has, I don't know, does it have a multiplayer set? I think it has multiplayer, but I don't have a set for it. But just playing games together with other people and earning achievements, that seems like a cool idea and cool thing to have on the site. If we have like a bunch of them, I know we have like, I think we have a handful of them. I'm not sure how many we have, but I just think that would be a really cool thing to do, especially when sometimes multiplayer sets or multiplayer games have some side content that you can only do in multiplayer. I keep going back to Nicktoons Racing, but there's like an unlockable two-player mode that you can only do in two-player. It's like head-to-head beach volleyball, kind of like Rocket League, but it's like way before Rocket League. And I kind of wanted to make achievements with that, but at the same time, their base set is just single-player. So I was like, oh, I guess I'll have to do it later, I guess. And, you know, I guess I could do a multiplayer set of that.
Yeah, I definitely agree that experiencing retro achievements together with friends can be so much fun. Like Draco said, doing Paper Mario multiplayer together was just an absolutely great time. I loved that. And I agree, we got to get back to that. It'll be soon. It'll be soon for sure. There are only a handful of multi-sets on RA. But one thing I wanted to mention is that, in case anyone is unclear, it does actually say in the Code of Conduct, playing co-op games with another player or other players is allowed. Of course, the dev can still block it on a set-by-set basis if they feel that's appropriate. But if you wanted to play, say, something like Goof Troop or Secret of Mana with a friend on Retro Achievements, you can, which is awesome and so much fun, and I don't know that a lot of people realize that. I know that with COVID, it can be difficult to get together with your friends in person, but honestly, there are some pretty cool workarounds that'll let you play games with people. When Draco and I did a Paper Mario multiplayer, for example, we did it over Parsec, which was a really good solution to allow us to play together at the same time, and he even streamed that. Another option is, I believe, RetroArch. I haven't used this personally, but I believe RetroArch has a netplay option, which, if I'm not mistaken, is actually compatible with achievements, so that both players playing at the same time can both earn achievements. I'm not 100% sure on that, so you might have to look into it, but that could be a really fun way to do like something like the Contra multiset with a friend. So highly recommend, fun stuff.
Yeah, I think the multiplayer aspect is really cool. I haven't really gotten into that too much. But yeah, I was thinking that RetroArch probably does have the net play, and Bendy just mentioned that. So that would be a good opportunity to do some of that. So maybe I'll reach out in the community and find some people to do some net play with soon. And one thing that I wanted to mention was the community aspect of retro achievements isn't really required, but there's a lot of cool people in the community. And if you just join the Discord and just start talking to people, you'll find that there's some really awesome people out there. And I've made a lot of good friends in the last 6 months just through RA and doing achievements. And the cool thing about that is, for example, I was watching a Draco stream of playing Diddy Kong Racing, and he was doing the mashing A technique, and I had no idea that that was even a thing. I had mastered the original set, and going through it a second time with that technique just made it so much easier. And Draco and I have sort of shared some techniques over the last couple months on different sets. And it's been a really cool experience having that social aspect to a bunch of single player games.
That for sure. That was very fun to share with that with you. I mean, just for a wrap up, guys, I mean, thank you so much, Shuzi, Sizzle, Bendy, Chipmunks, to all having been there. That was a great first roundtable. Thank you everyone again for participating. Please don't forget to hit that like button, subscribe, and to never miss a new content from our podcast. I'm very excited to see everything what in the comment of what you say about this new content. So let me us know if it will be good or not. So on that note, thank you for watching the RA Podcast Roundtable's first editions, and bye.